Welcome to .NET Rambles, a weekly podcast where Andy and Rowan discuss all things .NET related. Hello, Rowan. It's Friday again. Can you believe it?
Oh, I can't believe it. The week has flown by this week. I'm actually quite glad it's the weekend because although the week's flown by, it's felt like a long week at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. They do all seem to... It's funny. A lot of them are like that recently. They fly by, but they feel quite long at the time. But yeah, you're happy that you got to Friday.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're here now. We've got the weekend ahead of us. And
that's right. And
time for our weekly chat.
I've been looking forward to this all week, really, because, you were mentioning Signal R during the week. You mentioned it. That's a great thing for us to have a little chat about, what it's all about and everything.
We thought it deserved a longer conversation, didn't we? Yeah,
absolutely.
We did have a chat during the week and touched on Signal R. During the same conversation, you mentioned a random fact about McDonald's drive-thrus, which I thought was something that's certainly worthwhile repeating.
It is. It's a very strange random fact. I don't know how I came across this. I hadn't even really thought about it. But the first drive-thru, so where the first McDonald's drive-thru was opened, didn't even think about them not having drive-thrus. It's the sort of thing you think they've had forever. But apparently, obviously, it was in America. That's where it all started. There was soldiers. I'm not even going to try and pronounce this place. Soldiers at Fort I've probably destroyed that name. In Sierra Vista. Yeah. Apparently, they weren't allowed to appear in public wearing their uniforms. Obviously, they couldn't get out of the car to go and get food. So the local manager of the McDonald's had a brainwave. And thought he'd cut out part of the wall to allow an attendant and a window, and then made it low enough, obviously, to reach car windows and pass burgers and fries through so that they could obviously drive up to it, stop, not have to get out of the car. Not break the rules.
Brilliant. How about that?
And they could still get their burger and fries.
And they could stay in their uniform in the car.
That's right. Yeah. So they were happy. That? He was happy. Everybody was happy. So that was back in January 1975.
How about that? And what state was that?
That was in Sierra Vista, that was called. Soldiers at Fort Huchacha. Huchacha.
I just wanted to hear you say that name again,
thank you.
That's all.
Yeah, appreciate that. Cheers. Anyway, so we were going to have a chat about Signal R, weren't we?
We were.
What is it? What is Signal R then?
Well, Signal R is a library that sits on top of or works with the ASP.NET framework, or works with old framework, and there's a new core version as well, that basically allows you to set up two-way communication between your server and your Signal R clients. And those Signal R clients quite often are web-based clients. So it allows you to set up real-time functionality between your server and your clients. So what does that mean? Well, it means that you can have things like web browsers updating without users refreshing the page, off the back of things happening on the server. So that means you can have live real-time dashboards. Things like chats are a really common application of Signal R, or quite often the example that's given, things like games based in the web browser, in any sort of functionality that requires a client to update off the back of a server event. And traditionally, of course, HTTP is a stateless sort of one-way protocol where the server can't really talk back to the client. So Signal R comes along and solves that problem and allows the server to talk back to the client. Which is really quite cool.
Yeah, very clever. Nice. Okay, is it a new thing? You said it's part of core, but it's also in the old framework. So I guess it's been about for a while, or
yeah, it has been about for a while. I think it was Damien Edwards and David Fowler that produced the first version back in 2013, and they built that in. To work with traditional ASP.NET Core, not traditional ASP.NET Core, traditional ASP.NET. And it's been through a few iterations since then, and obviously been through a bit of a rework with .NET Core. But it's been around for a while. Obviously, the technologies that it's built upon, which is either WebSockets or long polling, those technologies have been around for a little while. And, you know, other frameworks and other ecosystems have obviously got libraries that work with WebSockets and long polling. But SignalR is sort of the .NET answer and provides some really nice abstractions for us as .NET developers to use. SignalR builds in the ability to work out what communication protocol to use under the hood, whether that be WebSockets or long polling based on whatever the browser or your client, the client that you're using will support. So it's been around for a while, but it's been through a few iterations and we're certainly in a really good place with the version that we've got out for .NET Core.
Okay, and you sort of said it works on existing sort of technologies. It's not a Microsoft type of thing. It doesn't only work in IE or anything like that. It's not proprietary to them.
No, that's right. Cool. So it sort of sits over the top of basically either WebSockets or HTTP long polling. So it sort of sits on existing browser technology protocols.
That's good. So you haven't got to worry about, you know, back in the days of things like Silverlight where you had to have certain things installed or anything like that. It's out of the box, works with browsers.
That's a really good point. Yeah, it doesn't require any sort of add-ons or you know, old school ActiveX controls or like Silverlight or, you know, back in the days of Flash. It's it's all built on existing browser technologies and it's got the smarts built into it to work out what the capabilities of the browser are, of the particular client are, and we'll sort of use the appropriate protocol based on what the client will support.
Brilliant. Nice. Okay, nice. And have you got any sort of examples of what you've used it for or when it's been useful for you?
Yeah, so I've used it a few times recently, actually. I've used it a few times in its various versions, but most recently with Core prior to starting back with you, actually, in our current role. I was working on a price comparison platform, and that platform went off and got prices from a load of different providers, got quotes from a load of different providers, and we used SignalR to update basically a website to show the results of all of those quotes and then aggregate all those results into things like minimum prices and total number of quotes received. And SignalR was a really good way to keep the client updated, given that we had a load of different providers who would all go off and return quotes at different times. So in the back end, we were making asynchronous HTTP requests off to external servers, but we were stitching that back into the front end, into the website using SignalR, and it was a really, really nice way to solve that problem.
Nice.
And on the front end, we were using a Vue client, and we found using the SignalR NPM JavaScript package really easy. It stitched in with Vue really, really quite nicely. Okay. So that was sort of one example. Another example was in terms of back office functionality. We then ended up building an admin sort of interface that used SignalR to basically provide real-time dashboards to show off the back of those quotes being sent off to those different providers, basically to provide back office users a real-time dashboard to show how many quotes were being pushed through the system at any one time. So, you know, SignalR also solved that problem really well.
Nice. Okay, and you mentioned, obviously, you're talking about the back end and the front end, so this isn't only for .NET languages. This is it's not, yeah, I suppose because you're using a web browser, I guess then JavaScript is an obvious choice. It's got to work with JavaScript. So you've got .NET on the back end, JavaScript sort of doing something with it.
Yeah, absolutely. That seems to be a very common use case for SignalR. So the server side of SignalR is written in .NET, but the clients can be written in anything from, you know, you could have a .NET console app as a client, but the examples that I'm talking about are sort of using a JavaScript client using the SignalR NPM client package, but there's also a Java client available, so you could be using Java as the client. We're not just limited to .NET here in terms of in terms of the SignalR clients, but I guess the most common use case is that browser based client, which is obviously going to be JavaScript.
Okay, and is that a limitation of it though? Is it just web apps, or can you use it elsewhere? Is that, you know, is it possible to use it in something like a console? You mentioned a console app, I think. So console apps can do it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Console apps anywhere where you can run those technologies. So, you know, console apps, Windows services. Now that we've got .NET Core obviously cross-platform. You know, you could run Linux daemons. You know, you know, the equivalent of a service on Linux. In the past, I've actually used SignalR in an Excel integration, which sounds a bit weird, but we used Excel as the client, and this was pre.NET Core. But Excel was used to update some data, which would then push that data back through a SignalR hub, and then you can broadcast those changes out to other clients, some of which could be web apps, some of which could be console apps. So, the applications are fairly far-reaching, really, anywhere where you can run any of those technologies. So, you know, .NET clients, Java clients, JavaScript clients, it's certainly not just scoped to web clients. Right.
Nice, very nice. Okay, and from the sounds of it, then it's not reliant on really new tech. It still works with the old tech. You can still use, you know, older browsers and newer browsers and mix and match them and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as we were sort of saying, SignalR sits on top of existing communication protocols. So, at the very lowest common denominator, it'll use HTTP long polling. So, where the browser will establish a HTTP connection through to the server and just leave that connection open, and the server will keep replying, but never actually finish off the request. So that'll support, you know, your older browsers. There's support in there for, you know, for the Forever Frame protocol, which is what IE uses, where a hidden iframe's set up and the server basically keeps a connection open and keeps responding with client script, which then the client will execute as it receives it. So I guess in answer, absolutely, the older browsers are supported through those older sort of protocols. For the newer HTML5 browsers, WebSockets is supported and server-side events is also supported. So that allows the server to push, you know, directly over HTTP back to the client. So I guess the beauty of SignalR as a framework is that you as the developer don't have to think through all of those intricacies of, right, well, how do I code up the fact that my web browsers may support WebSockets or they may not. SignalR, as the framework, takes care of selecting that communication protocol and does all of that under the covers.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, that's really helpful that it takes away all of that problem for you. It just lets you get on with the actual problem in hand. You write your code, it takes care of all that other setup stuff.
Exactly, even down to serializing, you know, the things that you're sending back and forth. There is scope for you to configure that, but by default, you know, SignalR will take care of that really well. It'll select the communication protocol, and as a developer, you don't have to think through any of that. You think about the stuff that you want to build and the stuff that you want to send back and forth between your clients and servers. So it's a really nice developer experience.
Nice. Okay. And obviously, do you need anything different on the back end then? Because we've said about, obviously, the client side is fine because you're going to have many clients and they've all got their browsers and stuff like that. But on the infrastructure for your back end, obviously you need a web server as you normally would, but does anything change there? Do you have to do anything extra, or is there sort of scope for doing extra stuff?
Yeah, not necessarily. By default, as long as you're running ASP.NET, you'll be able to run SignalR. If you're running ASP.NET, you know, traditional old school framework style, you'll have to use SignalR, you know, old school version. If you're running .NET, you know, ASP.NET Core, then you'll be able to run SignalR Core. So in terms of dependencies or anything extra you need set up in your hosting environment, there is nothing extra that you need, aside from if you are running in a server farm sort of environment. If that's the case, which quite often we are, if we're talking about significant applications that are dealing with significant amounts of traffic or a high uptime sort of environment, then there are a few things you need to think about. If you're running in a server farm environment, you need to enable sticky sessions basically for SignalR to work. Mm-hmm. And that's because a client connecting through to a server always needs to maintain a connection through to that same server. So therefore you need to set up, I think it's session affinity on ARRs, or you know, it's called different things on different technologies, but basically, you know, sticky sessions needs to be enabled. Yeah. Okay. If you are using multiple servers in a web farm sort of environment, and you want to broadcast messages out to all of your clients, you need to use what's called a SignalR backplane. And that is used to basically, that basically keeps track of all the servers and will make sure that any message that is broadcast from one server will then be broadcast out through all of the other servers, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that does make sense. Yeah, I wondered how that sort of thing would work, because I've obviously heard of like sticky sessions with load balancers, and you know, they try and keep the client talking to the same server. So you, like you say, you've got the session data and everything like that, so you know you're always getting the same conversation basically. So yeah, it's a similar thing with SignalR, but there is this ability to then do broadcasting to multiple clients, because obviously if I'm on one server and you're on another, how would they know about us clients unless they can talk to each other some way? So
exactly, okay. Yeah, so you need that extra layer there, which is the it's called the SignalR backplane. And there's a couple of different implementations that are available that SignalR supports. So you can use an Azure Service Bus backplane. Mm-hmm. You can also use Redis or SQL Server. And in terms of configuring your SignalR server side to use those backplanes, it's actually a really simple process, as most things are these days. You know, in the .NET Core world, it tends just to be installation of a NuGet package. So, for example, if you want to use the Redis backplane, you install the Microsoft.asp.net.signalr.stackexchange.redis NuGet package. Mm-hmm. And then you basically wire that in your startup, and you tell the dependency resolver to use that Stack Exchange Redis backplane, basically, and you provide the connection information. And that's it, really.
Okay, nice.
And those packages are written in such a way that that SignalR knows how to talk through those backplanes and broadcast the messages out to the other servers.
Excellent. Okay, so you're not even limited by having it just on Azure. They've actually allowed you to have this running locally still. You can have it locally running or have it in a data center somewhere, and you just pick the technology that works best for you.
Exactly, yeah. You could host it wherever you like, which is brilliant. You're certainly not tied to any hosting infrastructure. Sure. Quite the opposite. It's quite flexible in that you've got, you've got different backplanes that you can choose from depending on what you've got installed or what you can install or what you want to install. So, yeah, it's quite flexible.
Yeah, nice.
And great that you've got the option there to use it in a web farm environment.
Yeah, okay. And I suppose having it in a web farm, it's obviously, if you're going to have it in a web farm, that's because you've got lots and lots of users. So I'm guessing this scales quite well. It could scale to cope with a lot of users, thousands.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, by default, it's a very efficient library and scales really well. I think they say if you are running in an environment where you've got a high number of concurrent connections, there are some tweaking and tuning sort of recommendations that they make, and there's a section in the SignalR GitHub repo. It's actually, they've got a performance wiki there that sort of goes through and talks about certain tweaks that you can make to your IIS config or your ASP.NET config, things like the max number of concurrent requests in IIS. I think they say to increase that from a default of something like 5,000. And in your ASP.NET config, there are things like maximum concurrent requests per CPU and request queue limits and that sort of thing that they say you should increase, because rather than the libraries being the bottleneck, it'll start to be those default limits that are set. So there's a lot of interesting information on that wiki that talks you through different things that you can tweak. That's certainly worth a look if you're working in an environment that requires quite a high number of concurrent connections.
Yeah, nice problem to have, as always, isn't it?
If you, exactly. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And
when you just mentioned there, you said about GitHub. So this is on SignalR on GitHub. It's open source with the rest of their stuff, yeah?
It's all open source, just like the whole of .NET Core. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's all open source. It's available to to look at, and because it's all open source, you could write your own client. So we talked, you know, we talked about the fact that there's a client in JavaScript, there's a Java client, there's obviously a .NET client, but because all of this stuff is open source and all of the you know, all of the code under the hood is open source, you know, there's nothing to stop you going through that code and potentially, you know, looking at the protocols that SignalR uses, and building your own client off the back of that. So it's you know, it's brilliant that it's all open.
Yeah, it's nice. It's the big thing about ASP.NET Core, isn't it? It was all, you know, it started getting more and more open sourced, and then Microsoft just seems to have really, really embraced everything open sourced. So it's I think it's helpful to everybody. So it's
nice, absolutely.
Yeah, nice to be able to see how they code, you know, what they're doing, and it's all out in the open. And I think, you know, pull requests from people and companies, so it all helps. So
yeah, I mean, I fully embrace the, you know, the new world of Microsoft developing out in the open, and things like the UK government developing out in the open as well, because ultimately that results in better code, doesn't it? You know, seem uncomfortable for organizations to push this stuff out, you know, and make it open source, but ultimately it results in a, you know, in a better product and better frameworks and better technologies for everyone, doesn't it? You know, when you get the input of the community.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're not hiding it behind anything. You're being completely transparent. You can't hide behind anything. So, you know, and I think from that you get better projects, you get more help with things, which is great. So
exactly. And, and so, you get lots of different perspectives as well, don't you? Yeah, you know, when you put something out open source, you may have developed it with one point of view in one sort of context, but it's not until you put it out into the world that people come from all, you know, from all walks of life, really, and start shining lights in different ways, and start looking at the thing you've produced in completely different ways, and that ultimately, you know, gives you great feedback, and ultimately leads to a better product, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, and it also really, really helps us do the segue into our OS project of the week.
Oh, so, look at that! Brilliant.
Okay, like it, you see, it's all going somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Our open source project of the week. Well, this week I really wanted to give a shout out to Polly as the open source project of the week. Mm-hmm. And for those that aren't familiar with Polly, Polly's basically a NuGet package that you can install, and it allows you to express basically resilience and transient fault handling in terms of policies, and those policies that you can set up support patterns like retry patterns, like the circuit breaker patterns, like timeouts, bulkhead isolation, fallbacks. It's a really well written library. It's got a lovely fluent API, and it solves problems that we all come up against daily. And is a really nice abstraction over that problem.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I've seen it, read about it. I haven't had a chance to use it in anger yet, so it's something I'd like to have a look at and have a play with. So, yeah, I'll check that out. And
yeah,
Available. I've got the address here as thepollyproject.org. Yeah,
brilliant. That's it. Yeah, that's it. Nice. I think some of the .NET libraries integrate with Polly, or there are Polly sort of integrations built into some of the foundation stuff in .NET Core. So it shows it's a nice mature project, and really well written, and solves some really important problems.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. If it's got that sort of buy-in from somebody like that, then yeah, it's got to be good. So,
absolutely.
Okay. My one is a package called Fluent Docker. I only came across it probably a week and a half ago.
Oh yeah, nice.
Yeah, it was just popped up on a video I was watching. A guy was doing some open source projects, and this one popped up, and I'd never seen it before. I was quite intrigued by it. It's basically Fluent Docker. It's on GitHub, so again, open source, that you can go and have a look at how this all works. There's a NuGet package for it, so nice and easy to put it into your code and do what you've got to do with it. But basically, the example they've got is an example building up a container that's got Postgres in it. So you can spin up a container similar to, you know, like Polly, it's Fluent. So you just tell it that you want to use a container, tell it use image, expose port, give it some environment variables, and then wait for that port to become available, build it, and then start it. Simple as that. And once it's up and running, obviously, you can use it as if it you know, however you want to. So in this case, Postgres, you know, I think there's some examples on here, you know, spin these containers up. You can then do some unit testing or some integration testing, really, with your database, push stuff into it, run your code against it, make sure everything's working right. And then obviously, because it's a container, you just clear it down and it's gone.
Very cool. So this is C-sharp code you can write to spin up containers with a Fluent API, basically.
That's right. Yeah, if you look on the GitHub page, obviously it's difficult over a podcast, but yeah, if you look on their GitHub, they've got some code examples. But yeah, it's literally C-sharp code using a Fluent interface, and it seems to support the majority of all the Docker and Docker Compose interactions that you can normally do.
Yeah.
So everything looks like everything they've got available there, you can just use a Fluent interface to get to it, build it up, and also yeah, just as though you would. It's just probably the same as running a, you know, a Docker Compose file or whatever locally. It gives you the same output at the end of it, and then you can just programmatically access it, tidy it up, and just keep reusing it. So obviously the nice thing is, of course, you're going to get the same environment every time, so you can always spin up the same container versions, give it the same environment, push stuff into it. So it's a nice way of doing it. I've not really seen anything like this before, so I was quite impressed by it.
Very nice. That looks very cool. Yeah. So Fluent Docker, written by Mario Toffia, by the looks of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, nice. Take a look at it. So I'm going to try and find a project to use that in soon.
Very cool. How does that fit with your utility of the week this week?
Yeah, utility of the week. Slightly different, but on similar lines. It's a thing called ngrok.
Yeah.
Used it years and years ago, and it's always one. I have to Google it every time, to be honest. I can never remember the name for some reason. I know it's got grok in it. I can never, for some reason, remember it's ngrok. I'll try and remember from now on. But yeah, basically just if you're building something locally, so a web app you're building locally, what this does is it gives you the ability to run a command line, which gives you a URL, a public URL, to your local host. So you can expose your web app or your web API to anybody else. So if you want to give clients or other developers like you, if I was building something and I wanted you to give it a try, rather than having to actually publish it onto an internet-facing server.
That's right.
You can just use this, and it just routes, tunnels it all through to your machine. So yeah, they say, you know, it's goes through NAT or firewalls, so you should be able to get it through anything. Had a few times I've used it for, like I said, for client projects where a client's wanted to have a look at something, and obviously they're remote, and you're not finished with the code or whatever, and you don't want to push it up somewhere and deploy it. So you can just quickly open this up, give them the URL, they can have a go at it, and then I think it disappears after a few hours or something, unless you buy the you can buy a license to it as well,
right,
which gives you the ability to keep connections, have sort of more permanent URLs.
Yeah.
And I think there's also a thing, it gives you a dashboard, so you can actually monitor traffic through it as well. So stuff like that. So
it's very cool. Great collaboration tool, and works really well for the agile way of working, doesn't it? Because, you know, agile is all about developing something and getting it in front of people as quickly as possible.
Absolutely.
And if you can cut out the steps of, you know, having to, I mean, obviously we've created these steps for a reason, but if you just want to get something in front of someone really quickly and get some feedback, ngrok's a great way of of enabling that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, that's it, you're right. It's certainly, yeah, you need your processes and your normal steps in place, but it's the sort of thing, if you don't want to commit the code, do a build on the code, because you know you're not finished, you just want to get some feedback on it, it's a great way of doing that. So
brilliant. Marvelous. Cool. Excellent. Good one.
So yeah, that's our OS project of the week and our utility of the week.
Love it.
Right, so moving on, the next question I had about this is, how do you actually go about using SignalR then? What's the steps involved to actually get it running in say, like a web app or something? How would you go about that?
Yeah, sure. So in terms of the makeup, you need to make sure that you've got a server set up in SignalR, which is written in .NET. And you also need to sort of get your client connected to that server. So, you know, high level, you've got your server running SignalR, most likely running a SignalR hub, which is just .NET code, and you've got your client connected to that hub. So, you know, the first step is to establish that server-side code. And the easiest way to do that is to create a hub, although you can drop down to lower level sort of APIs if you don't want to use a hub, if a hub's not appropriate for your needs. But that can obviously be written in C# or F# if you want. And the hub will receive messages from your client. So that'll expose some methods that clients can call into. It'll go off and do your work, and that hub can then also connect back to the client who sent the message, or to all clients, or to, you know, to various other sort of categories of clients, you know, so there's an idea of groups if you wanted to, you know, to sort of organize your clients into groups. So from the server, you can contact clients in a number of different ways. So you need to establish your server, establish your hub on your server, and then obviously you need to get your clients sorted out. So if we're talking about a web app, you would add the client-side library. So if it's SignalR Core that you're working with, you'd add the SignalR Core NPM package, and then you would use that package in your JavaScript code, which basically requires you to establish a hub connection, and then you start calling methods on your server, and you allow your server to call into methods on your client, so or functions, you know, depending on what technology it is you're writing the client in. So it's, you know, it's really straightforward. There's great documentation available on the Microsoft site with loads of walkthroughs, you know, as always. So it's really easy to get started. It's certainly worth a look.
Great. Okay. Yeah. And like you said, more information, you can find it on obviously the Microsoft site, or you can Google it, obviously, or use your search engine of choice, GitHub, we mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. Like yeah. That. So all the source code is available in the SignalR repository. There's lots of documentation in that repo as well. As I mentioned, the performance wiki's there. So that's got all the tips about how to tweak IIS, you know, /ASP.NET to, you know, to increase that number of concurrent connections. So that's worth a look. Okay. Obviously the standard Microsoft documentation site has got loads of SignalR. It's got a big SignalR section there. So that's worth a look. And that'll get you started. Absolutely.
Okay. I suppose the best thing is you just go and give it a try. Go and have a
give it a try. You know what? That's the only way that I can really truly appreciate something is to try and spin something up myself. Yeah. So, you know, the great thing with, you know, with this stuff is it's really well documented and really easy to get up and running, particularly if you're a .NET dev already. Yeah. So, really easy to get going.
Great. Well, that's fantastic. Thank you for that. That's filled in a few gaps, and I'm looking forward to giving that a try and trying some of those other ways of setting it up, and see what I can build with it. Certainly, you know, having a look at how you integrate it with other things like Excel, that sounds intriguing.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Loads of different things. So give that a try.
Lots of different possibilities. So the sky's the limit, really.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thanks very much for that. That's great. And as always, it's been good to talk and catch up at the end of the week. We'll have to do this again next week.
Oh, let's do it. Let's do it again next week. Yeah, good. Let's do that. I'm looking forward to it already.
Cool. Okay. Well, I'll leave you with one last little thing, a weird .NET language quirk, weird fact thingy of the week. Just, again, something I came across. It was something we were talking about, and it just popped up about .NET framework. We were talking about it being a framework and not just a language, and the number of languages actually using the .NET framework, and found out, came across a wiki page that just sort of lists a few of the languages using it, and there's at least 45, maybe more. There's some variants on those languages, but yeah, about 45 different language actually compiled down to the .NET framework.
Wow.
So it's quite impressive that there's been that many out there.
That's, you know, incredible, isn't it? Yeah, C++, C, Boo. Yeah, Boo, a Python-inspired. I remember using Boo back in the day. It's quite good for DSLs, but there's loads of them, isn't there? Yeah.
So it's yeah, a lot of people trying different things out with it, which is quite nice. So,
marvellous. Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for that. Interesting as always. I will catch up with you soon.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Until next week.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.